In the Northwest, American Indians carved totem poles to remember great figures in their native culture or commemorate a clan victory. But it turns out a totem pole can also be created to remember darker things. Harriet Baskus has this story of a particular totem pole and the people who are trying to preserve what's left of it.
There's fragments of old chests, and this is a flipper from a big sea lion carving. And
Bill Holm is a wood carver and an expert on Indian art of the Northwest Coast. Today, he's armed with a flashlight and poking around the back room of Seattle's Burke Museum of Natural History and Culture. Holm is a curator emeritus here, and he's searching for a weathered 2-foot by 2-foot wooden shell of a face. It's a carved head that's been in storage for about 4 decades. It's here somewhere, and it's all that's left of a totem pole that was between 16 and 20 feet tall.
This head fragment is hidden here in one of the shelves. A little bit awkward to see. Oh, yeah, we're looking at the front. If you just peer right in there, you'll be able to see the profile of the big head.
Traditionally, the totem poles of Northwest Coast Indians are made from red cedar trees. Each carved animal, human figure, or family crest has a special meaning and is placed on a pole in a specific order, so a story can be read from top to bottom. Some poles are painted red, green, black, or blue, and each relates a legend, announces a wealthy family, or honors a tribal elder. But the giant carved head Holm is looking at once topped a pole with a different purpose. It's a shame pole. It bore the image of a supernatural figure, the Zuniqua, a mythical wild woman.
She can always be recognized by the fact that she has a very bony face, lips are pushed out, cheeks are hollow, eyes are either closed or hollow, and she's sometimes thought of as a kidnapper of children. But she's also the source of power and wealth. There are stories that tell of how an ancestor in some way or another defeated the Zuniqua, and from that, or in that some way or another, was given by the Zuniqua the right to certain privileges.
Only certain families were permitted to use the Zuniqua image. And in 1912, a young man in a small Canadian village used the Zuniqua in a ridicule pole he hoped would shame his new in-laws into paying a debt.
It comes from near the north end of Vancouver Island, the village of Guilford Island, or Guayastums in their Indian name of it. So when this person from Guayastums married the woman whose family had this privilege, he raised this pole representing the Zuniqua because there was some delay in the marriage payment.
For at least 3 years, this giant Zuniqua gazed disapprovingly down on the village with empty, outstretched arms. Then the debt was paid, and huge wooden slabs representing coppers, the sign of wealth and property, were placed in the Zuniqua's hands and on top of her head. Then the pole was turned away from the village and out towards the sea, where the wind and weather could take their toll.
Ordinarily, people consider that once the pole is up, that's the high point of its career, and it, as it gradually deteriorates, eventually falls down, and they don't usually repair them. So this pole was not repaired. It was sort of propped up, I guess, a little bit, but the arms sagged, the coppers fell off. Eventually, it deteriorated to the point where nothing was salvaged but the face, which was just a shell.
According to Native tradition, the pole should have been left to rot after having served its purpose. But the shell of the face was sold to a collector and eventually given to the Burke Museum. The museum asked Bill Holm to replicate the pole, using the head and old photographs as a guide. That doesn't please Robert Keogh, or Saduts. He's a native carver currently working on a canoe by a lake in Seattle. Saduts feels replicating the pole inappropriately calls up the power of the Zuniqua and the debt.
I say once you make it again, and it's just like making the seed again. It's like genetically trying to clone something, and then you keep the story relived, reconnected, and that will bring shame back to that family.
That would be true, says Bill Holm, if the museum was in some way trying to claim the privileges of the family that received them from the Zuniqua.
The museum is not displaying it as a privilege. Among these people, the Kwakwaka'wakw people, very often they sold privileged objects to outsiders with the understanding that the object they sell is not the privilege.
One day they shall understand don't dig up the past all the time. When the cedar gets tired and it goes back to the mother, she feeds the mother, he eat him. That's the same way with the story. The debt's been paid, he got the right to decay and go back and disappear. Was it there or wasn't it?
Sadut says he understands outsiders' desire to see totem poles and preserve them in museums. But that, he says, can disrupt the natural life cycle of these memorials. The Burke Museum will explore both perspectives in October. As part of a major show, it will display both the 16-foot-tall replica of the Shane Pole and the fragile, weathered wooden Zuniqua head. For Studio 360, I'm Harriet Baskis.
You can see images of the original Shane Pole at our website, studio360.org.